A man named Thomas walked across the stage of the Lyric Theater last Monday to receive his master's degree. Not long ago, he walked across the floor of his prison cell, like a caged bird, wings clipped, as he had done for over 20 years. I met Thomas at a holiday party 2 weeks ago. You know, a mutual friend casually remarked while the band played and the people danced and filled their plates with food, Thomas is about to graduate. I turned to Thomas, smiling. "You are? How wonderful," I said. "Congratulations." "Do you know his story?" our friend inquired. "I don't," I said. And turning around to face Thomas again, I asked, "Will you tell me?" After a heartbeat or two, Thomas began to speak, his head tilted down, his eyes searching mine. And as I listened to his voice, which was soft with remembering and regret and humility, instinctively, I reached into my pocket, and there it was, cool and smooth between my fingers, a stone made of glass, deep blue-green. And on that stone, one word of prayer that was painted in plain white letters. You see, earlier that day, I had picked the stone out of the basket in my office and placed it in my pocket, expectant, curious, wondering who it was for. In an instant, without thinking, I now placed that cool stone in Thomas's warm hand, a graduation gift, a stone of blessing, a stone of joy. Surprised, Thomas held it up to the light and saw the word that was painted on it, and his eyes filled with disbelief, recognition, and tears. What got me through each and every day of those 20-some years was hope, he whispered, his thumb caressing the word on the blue-green glass. Hope, and the promise of that truth-teller Jeremiah that the Holy One who created me has plans for my well-being and not for my dis-ease, plans to give me a future with hope. Tonight, the story that we've gathered to hear and remember and celebrate is one that's familiar and known to our ears and hearts, yes? That of a poor couple expecting a child, going on a long journey to be counted as part of an imperial census, and the peculiar circumstances of the child's birth in a manger because there was no room for them elsewhere. And even more peculiar, messengers of light appearing to shepherds nearby to herald his birth. This is at least according to Luke's telling. To Matthew, in Matthew's narration, the peculiarity around Jesus' birth centers on the appearance of a bright star in the sky, yes? Those wise ones traveling from the distant east to pay a visit bearing gifts and a tyrannical despot named Herod, who is so power-hungry and power-insecure that later we're told he orders the execution of all male children under the age of 2 living under his jurisdiction to eliminate any perceived future threat to his rule. On the surface, it might appear that these stories, the Christmas stories and the story of Thomas, have nothing in common. And yet, if we dig beneath the surface, there's a chord that resonates and binds them together, a chord that sounds of light amidst darkness, perseverance amidst despair, hope where there should, for all appearances, be none. A poor couple living in Roman Palestine as part of an oppressed, occupied people. A man living in a prison cell for over 20 years. Poet Maya Angelou writes, "A free bird leaps on the back of the wind and floats downstream till the current ends and dips his wing in the orange sun rays and dares to claim the sky. But a bird that stalks down his narrow cage can seldom see through his bars of rage. His wings are clipped and his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The caged bird sings with a fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still. And his tune is heard on the distant hill, for the caged bird sings of freedom." The truth is, as it turns out, and as many of us know, it doesn't take living behind bars or under military occupation to sing of freedom, to yearn for salvation, to hunger and thirst for righteousness, for God's reign, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as in heaven. It could be living with a disease, an illness, or an addiction, or loving someone who struggles with one. It could be living with unresolved trauma from a past war or battle, in the literal or figurative sense. It could be living in the particular season of life you're in, companioned by grief or depression. It could be struggling to pay bills or to find employment or to maintain a particular lifestyle, struggling to find your purpose, or maybe even to find a friend. It could be living with the ever-present weight of someone else's expectations or the pains of growing older. There are, in fact, 1,000 ways we can find ourselves caged, yearning to be free, desiring to be whole, to be healed. And if not for ourselves, then for someone we love, for our family, our community, our city, our nation, our planet that is our home. Just the other night, I spent time in the company of a family friend who is so disillusioned with the state of our world, the hatred and divisions, the endless wars, the pain of our planet, that he can hardly make it out of his house these days. And the only respite from despair he finds is in quiet moments in nature, or his woodshop, or with his beloved partner. Another story for you. One evening, a Cherokee elder told his grandchild about a battle that goes on inside each of us. "My child," the elder said, "the battle is between 2 wolves inside us all. One wolf is full of anger, envy, jealousy, regret, despair, arrogance. The other is full of joy, peace, love, hope, humility, kindness, truth, compassion, faith." The child thought about it for a moment and then asked, "Well, which wolf wins?" The elder simply replied, "The one you feed." It's so easy, apparently, for us to feed that first wolf, isn't it? For one thing, it's what makes the news and the headlines. But you see, the good news, those life-giving stories, those acts of mercy and compassion, kindness and healing, seldom make the headlines or blow up our cell phones. The good news and those life-giving stories and moments are those that happen and are shared and told on the outskirts, on the edges, in the fields, and in private conversations. even in prison cells. Back to Thomas. He held that blue-green glass stone that had been in my pocket with the very word of prayer that had carried him through each and every day of more than 20 years behind bars. And there he stood, holding it in the palm of his hand just a few days from receiving his master's diploma. A moment of sweet, sweet silence settled between us. And then, quieter still, eyes shining, Thomas asked, "Do you know how many people live in our world, in our city, without hope?" "I want to make sure people know," he said, "that hope is real. It has power to change the world. It did mine." So on this eve before Christmas, as we gather together in this space, each of us carrying within our hearts and minds a universe of people, places, situations, news headlines and world events, family matters and work concerns, dreams fulfilled, dreams broken, loved ones present, loved ones lost, questions and wonderings, poetry and prose, darkness and light. Let us hear once again the message of the angels, angels like Thomas. Hope is real. Salvation is at hand. Christ is born. And let us welcome the Christ anew and again within the manger of our own minds, hearts, and souls, that we may embody hope, bearing and being Christ in our world, healing, serving, loving. Amen.